Get me for free. Courtesy of Yelp for Restaurant. Tools and tactics are what's going to make you successful in 2024. Yelp for Restaurants has the tools you need to scale your restaurant this year, and I'm here to help. Sign up for a consultation with Yelp Guest Manager and get a free one-hour coaching session with me. In our session, we'll dive deep into your restaurant and build the blueprint to overcome your current obstacles and scale your profitability. You can sign up for both free sessions by simply going to restaurants.yelp.com/full comp today. I'll see you soon. Now here we go.
Be the best at your craft. Be driven in your craft. Be passionate about whatever you're doing. Both my parents are pilots. I'm not a pilot, right? But they're both pilots. And they taught me a very simple thing. Love what you do and be the best at it. And that's what I'm teaching my children.
Welcome to Full Comp, a show offering insight into the hospitality industry, featuring restaurateurs, thought leaders, and innovators. Served up on the house. Are you on track to hit your profitability goals for this year? If you're struggling to hit your numbers, I might be able to help. Here's how I do it. Every year, I offer 5 complimentary growth sessions to restaurant owners looking to scale. In this call, we'll examine your current situation to see what is and isn't working. We'll identify your growth possibilities by the close of the year. We'll uncover the number one thing holding you and your business back. And we'll develop a growth plan that will get your business results. Go to planwithjosh.com to schedule one of the 5 complimentary growth sessions. They're going to go quickly. They always do. I think we've seen in recent years that we get further faster when we work together. Few individuals exemplify this ideology more than Chef Dustin Vallette. Through strategic partnership, the chef has managed to grow a profitable restaurant, a successful wine brand, and contribute greatly to both his community and our industry. Today, we sit down to discuss how to build these valuable relationships and how to leverage them for the greater good.
So my great-grandfather was Honoré Vallette. He is that classic immigrant story. He came from Decazeville, France, and he came over here at the turn of the century, 1900s, not the 20th century, 1900s, with the idea and the dream to literally follow what is the American dream. He started off as a baker in San Francisco. He grew and became successful enough to have his own bakery. And then from there, he moved up to Napa over there in St. Helena. They moved over here to Healdsburg. His first bakery is right here where the Matheson resides, and it was called the Snowflake Bakery back in 1920. And this, to him, was his dream. He always wanted to live in a place similar to where he grew up, Decazeville. He wanted to raise a family here and have a slice of that American dream. For me, it was very inspirational. It was amazing to see a person came across for 2 months on a boat, right, with nothing more than $20 in your pocket and a dream and an idea. And it reminded me of my upbringing, remind me of my start in the culinary industry, of really saying you can have an idea, a dream, and you can grow and take that to wherever you want to go. That was incarnation of Vallette, and now the Matheson was to follow my great-grandfather's footsteps, bring community together, and really have a legacy for my family.
This is going to be a ridiculous question, potentially. I don't know. I'm genuinely curious. Do you think it's harder now, or do you think it was harder then?
People always talk about that, right? You hear about your mom and dad, how it was, you know, uphill both ways to school and had to work, walk 20 miles. I really think that now is much harder and much more competitive than it was back then. Back then, back in the 1900s, 1940s, 1960s, 1980s, 1990s, back then it was much easier because everybody was starting this new idea. But the trade-off in that was they had the infrastructure and they had the ability to have a mom and pop store. They had the ability to have 3 employees at their little store. Nowadays, it's much more complex. The rules, the regulations, the overall just atmosphere that you have as a business owner makes it much more challenging. So I think there's definitely advantages to what we have nowadays. We have computers and technology and the ability to have a massive amount of information at our fingertips, and also the ability to share our story amongst millions of people out there, like your amazing show we're doing right now. Although back 50, 60, 70 years ago, it was a little more simplistic because you didn't have quite the regulations you had to follow through.
Did you have a muse
Was there somebody that you looked to that you wanted to model your life or your career after?
I remember my dad telling me when I was a kid, he goes, if you shoot to the moon, the best thing you can do is fall short and arrive a couple miles high in the sky. And for me, yes, I did. I was very fortunate as a younger child. When I was 20 years old, I worked for Thomas Keller, the French Laundry. And to me, that was one of the pinnacle chefs, right? Then and still probably today. So I've always been able to aspire to be like some of these amazing mentors that I had. But I think more importantly is we can carve our own path. What my definition of success is different than potentially yours or other people out there. We got to sit back and say, what is the key to life? What is, when you sit back and put your head on that pillow and go to sleep, how do you go, oh, I was successful today, or I'm successful in my career? I think for me, that muse really is a work-life balance between being part of my community, inspiring others in my industry, and at the same time, provide for my family.
What drew you back? Because I would argue that your career took you far, far, far away from there. And then eventually you got drawn back, which I would assume that there's a reason.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm born and raised here in Healdsburg. When I left this town, it was a little more simplistic than it is now. But the key part, the reason why I came back home is I wanted to raise my family. I wanted to hone my skills. I wanted to showcase my craft in a place that I called home. And I get to call home yet again. On top of that, Healdsburg is an amazing area. If you've ever been here before, this is such a unique, world-renowned place where you can drive an hour and a half and be up in the snow. You can drive 45 minutes and be at the ocean. We have some of the best viticulture. We have some of the best terroir here. We have some of the best Pinot Noir Chardonnay known to man in this area. And that's combined with the fact that we have Liberty Duck, Dry Creek Peach, a lot of these big iconic producers that you fly in overnight to New York or Chicago is growing right here. We live in a very unique microclimate and a very unique geographical location that is really unmatched, unparalleled to everywhere I've been in the world, from Italy, France, Los Angeles, New York, to everywhere I've lived, Hawaii. We're special.
Yes. One thing you didn't mention is that it's also expensive as shit, which from, let's talk, I mean, practically as a resident, that's a hurdle, right? But then also as a business owner, that's a hurdle as well, because it's also expensive to do business here. And so when you were conceptualizing, let's say the first restaurant, I mean, the dollars had to make sense. So how did you make that first restaurant work, considering one, the competitive landscape, two, all of the overhead associated with running a restaurant in that area? How did you make it work?
That's a really good question. So when you think about what competition is, I always go back to a very simple analogy that I have is if you didn't have Coca-Cola, you would have had Pepsi. If you didn't have Pepsi, you wouldn't have had Coca-Cola. These are two massive rivals that literally sell sugar water. But what they did was they had to outmarket each other. Because of that desire to outmarket each other, it allowed those two companies to grow and be some of the most successful companies we know. How many companies Coca-Cola owns, I can't even count, right? There's probably 100 different companies, brands they own. But it was really that competition they had that allowed that growth. And the day, I'm the biggest believer and biggest supporter that competition hones your ability to find what the key success is. If we lived in an area where there's only one restaurant, we wouldn't push as hard as we do. We live, I work. Our community is filled with world-class restaurants. Michelin 3-star, Michelin 2-star, Michelin 1-star, Michelin noted restaurants. If you look at the Michelin guide, Healdsburg is just completely nothing but red dots and yellow dots. We are truly blessed to live in an area that is extremely competitive, which forces us as business owners to outshine our competitor, which means the consumer gets to have an experience that's unparalleled, unmatched. You really get the best of both worlds when it comes up here. And you get to, as a consumer, get to sample and enjoy the best restaurants because of the competitive nature, the competitive necessity that we have as business owners.
Huh, Dustin Vilette, growth mindset.
Absolutely.
It's such a rarity in our industry, though.
It's quintessential, though.
When you look at the industry at large, I would argue that you could describe it as like a race to the bottom, meaning like it's always been who can sell the most expensive stuff for the lowest price for the longest period of time without going out of business. And that's a scarcity mindset. That's saying there's not enough business to go around, so I'm going to try and drive my competitors out of business. The difficult thing about the tier of dining that you find yourself in is there has to be this massive total addressable market, right? Because what I found is once your per customer average scales above $100 a person, it's for very few people does it become like a weekly haunt. which means in order to be busy weekly, you need a lot more people. When I went from owning a dive bar in Hollywood that printed money to a 6,000 square foot, two-story fine dining restaurant, I found that out the hard way. But, you know, I mean, the total addressable market for the bar was probably 1,000 people, and it was more than we needed. But the use case was people came in every day. And then in the fine dining restaurant, if we did a world-class job, which we did, we'd see you twice a year, three times a year. This is the best experience you had ever had in your life. So talk to me about the market dynamics. And from a marketer's perspective, how you create enough demand to facilitate multiple locations.
We're very fortunate where Healdsburg is a true destination, right? You're always going to have people who want to come experience the wine country. We're also very fortunate where we are different than most. We're out here helping our competitors. If single threads need scallops, we're going to run over scallops to them. If Barn Diva needs sashimi, right, we're going to run it over. We own and operate three restaurants here in Healdsburg. And when you think about that, we have a town of 10,000 people. And my one restaurant, the Matheson, right, we'll see on a busy Saturday, probably about 800 customers on a busy Saturday. So that's about 8% of the population of this entire town at one of my three restaurants in one day. And what that means to me is that there's a constant flow of people coming here visiting our area, number one. Number two, it causes us to be on top of our game. And I think, again, this is the key to why this is such a culinary destination is we don't have just one restaurant. We have three. There are, I believe, 43 restaurants in a town of 10,000, one of which does 800 covers a day. That means that we're all doing our best to outshine our neighbors. And yet we're here to help our neighbors because we have a very simple philosophy. If you come to Healdsburg and you have a bad experience at my restaurant or my competitor's restaurant, you're not coming back. Now, the inverse, if you come into my town, Healdsburg, and you have an amazing restaurant, competitor's restaurant, what you're going to do, amazing meal, a competitor's restaurant, what you're going to do is you're going to tell your friends, I went to Healdsburg and I had the best dinner ever at Cyrus. Hey, I went to Healdsburg and had the best wine I've ever had over there at Arista. What happens is people come back to here. That word of mouth gets spread. You talk about marketing 101. Our marketing is that this little box we live in called Healdsburg is amazing. The best food, the best agriculture, some of the best overall geographical location you could possibly ever have from a culinary and viticultural standpoint. And yet we all work well in the sandbox because we want people to come back and experience Healdsburg. So yes, there's competitive edge to what we have. There's also a very clear mindset that the better Healdsburg is from a culinary and a viticultural standpoint, the more people are going to come visit our little neck of the woods.
I want to talk about Scratch Sushi because I thought that was a really, really interesting choice in terms of strategic partnership, but also like what an amazing opportunity to work with and learn from and have them learn from you. Talk to me about what that experience has been like bringing on a roommate.
Philip Lee is a lot of very small world out there. So Philip Lee used to work for Brian Best. Brian Best, their executive chef at Route 106, he used to work with him, work for him at Hatfield's back in the day. And I think that is probably the quintessential is it's somebody that we knew and somebody we could trust in the very beginning. The relationship, the roommate, as you called it, is a great way of describing it. Because they flourish off our success. We flourish off their success. Somebody who's coming into our restaurant, they might not want to have a pure omakase 17-course menu, but they've heard of our restaurant because of Scratch. On the same hand, someone's maybe come in from Florida, right? And they are really excited to try our restaurant, our American interpretation of French cuisine, right? And they're enjoying the California-inspired menu downstairs. But maybe they're missing something. Maybe they want to have a true sushi experience where the sushi is made directly in front of you and never touches a plate. It's handed straight to you and very unique and very creative. So the ability to have those two relationships, the ability to cast a larger net collectively, which gets more people inspired to come visit Healdsburg, goes back to the original conversation we had of saying how quintessential that is that Healdsburg is a driving force behind what we're doing. My first restaurant is called Valette Healdsburg. It's not Valette. If you look at the bottom of that, it says Healdsburg on the very bottom. And that was baked into our business model 9 years ago to say that we want to talk about Healdsburg and the experience you have when you come to our town, our community, when you become one of our friends in this small town.
I love that. I want to go back and talk about the wine for a minute because I've done, I think, like 380 interviews at this point, which is a lot. And if I was to say that there's one common thread between everyone on the show that has achieved massive success. It's this ability to discern between what is an opportunity and what is a distraction. Focus. Focus is key to success. And so you can look at the wine, and I mean, looking back over the course of your career, you are a wine nerd to the nth degree. It comes up again and again and again in your career. So I know you love it, right? And you're super passionate about it. And it could easily have been a bust or a distraction, but it's turned out to be an opportunity, which it didn't have to be. And there was a strong possibility, had you made different decisions, that it wouldn't have been. So what systems did you put in place? What kind of plan did you craft to make sure that this thing that you love, which could have been a hobby, was actually an opportunity professionally?
I think that is a very, very good analytical analysis of what different success levels are. It is something that is essential for your business and a distraction to your business. You think about, for me, I think about a good meal. And it's hard for me to tell you my favorite dinner I've ever had, my favorite dish, without thinking about what I drank with it. And think about, I worked and lived in Hawaii. Amazing. But when you're in Hawaii, you're not thinking about a 12-course amazing tasting menu. At least I'm not. I'm thinking about putting my feet in the sand, thinking about having a Mai Tai in one hand, maybe a good, cool Gewurztraminer, right? Or good dry Riesling. And I'm thinking about fresh fish. When you're in Alaska, you're not thinking about raw fish and putting your feet in the sand and having a cold cocktail. You're thinking about a hot toddy. You're thinking about eating some beautiful black cod you just caught, some beautiful coho salmon. So it's really that location that's quite essential. We're in the wine country. Our relationship with our wineries are impeditive to our success. And I think it's quite essential that we're able to sit back and say, if a meal is good with water, it's better with wine. If wine is good by itself, it's better with food. And that culmination of the relationship between the winemaker and the chef, I think is the key to my success. And it allowed us to create a whole new business, Valette Wines, under the umbrella and the pretense that food is better with wine and wine is better with food. We are very fortunate to be able to really, truly tell the story of Healdsburg, tell the story of the wine country, tell the story of why did my great-grandfather come here? Why is this Healdsburg founded by Italian and French immigrants? Because this is what they did. They came out here. They found the next Europe. They found what they reminded themselves of their home countries, and they did what they knew. They planted vineyards. They did what they knew. They planted farms. They started raising lambs and cattle. And all of a sudden, you created a European West, if you will, right? A Europe West. You created this small little mecca of amazing food and amazing wine, all be growing here inside this little baby valley. And people come experience it, they want to have the true experience, the true understanding of what Healdsburg is. And that, to me, really is intertwined with amazing winemakers. We have 400-point winemakers, four of the top winemakers making a wine for us right now. And we tell the story of what their craft is, what their passion is through our eyes, through culinary, through a chef's eyes. And that relationship together is worth more than gold.
Talk to me about what you've learned through marketing the wine brand that has served you well in the restaurant industry and things that you learned marketing the restaurant that have served you well in marketing the wine brand.
Absolutely. The essence of the restaurant and the wine brand are exactly the same. You start the best quality steak you possibly can, and you just don't fuck it up, right? When the wine brand, you do the exact same thing. You start with the very best quality grapes you possibly can get, and you just don't mess them up. And I think there really is a delta between the nuances of great wine and good wine. And the nuances are so minute, but same thing in cooking. The difference between a great steak and a horrible steak is literally an extra 1 minute in a pan. It's literally an extra sprinkling of salt, or too much salt, or not enough salt. It's the nuances that are really, truly the difference. And I think the creation of the wine brand, the creation of the restaurants, have absolutely ran in parallel with the idea and the philosophy, you work with the best, use the best technique, and you have people who are passionate about what they're doing. From the person growing the grape, to the person growing that lamb, to the person cooking that lamb, to the person making that wine, you work with the best products, the best people, and with one singular vision and one singular passion to make the best product possible.
I feel like with restaurants, I think restaurants are a lot like children in the way that like you're ready to open another one once you forgot how hard it was to open the last one. Same with children, right?
Exactly.
But the reason that I bring it up is because I would imagine, and you tell me if I'm wrong, that you started the wine brand in the same way that we start all of our restaurants with, I'm going to do this thing. How hard could it possibly be? I understand the basic premise here. I'll have this up and running in 6 weeks and it's going to be great. Right. The contractor said he'd have it done in 45 days. I'm sure we'll open on time.
Absolutely. Oh, how nice that would be if that was only reality.
Right. But I look at the wine thing and I say, like, you knew a lot about it, right? Just like you knew a lot about the restaurant industry before you became a restaurateur. But it is an entirely different experience owning a restaurant versus operating a restaurant.
Completely night and day.
Right. And I would say most of that experience, most of the delta in between one and the other exists in those hours between 1:30 in the morning and 5 a.m. when you're sleeping next to your or you're laying next to your spouse, hyperventilating, right?
Absolutely.
And so with the wine thing, I would assume that at this stage in the game, we're able to look back on it and be like, man, that was a great decision. So glad I did that. Totally worth it. But I would also assume that there were also those moments where you were on your own, hyperventilating in the employee restroom, wondering, why on earth did I get myself into this? How did you get through those moments? And what skills did you rely on that helped you be successful in this one thing and then also translated to success in something that is arguably entirely different?
Absolutely. I mean, you sit back and think about anybody whose name we know, Albert Einstein, Elon Musk, right? Anybody's name you could think of right now, maybe a short list of 20 or 30 names you could think of, right? Either our generation or a former generation. They had one thing that separated everyone else. They had passion. They had an idea and a clear vision. They would, no matter what, not give up on that dream, that aspiration. And it didn't matter if that was something that they were going to do at 3 o'clock in the morning, they were going to wake up and start a new project. That didn't mean if it was Elon Musk over there sleeping on the floor, right, of Tesla when he first started it. That didn't mean if it was a person who is so driven that no matter what obstacles were thrown in front of them, they would overcome them. As a business owner, you have to be driven. As a business owner, you have to have an idea and a vision that says, no matter what, I will be successful, regardless of the stuff that's thrown at me. When it came to the wine brand, there wasn't nights that were sleepless. There are nights that are sleepless. There are so many things that are quintessential. You have to have a drive, a passion. You've got to say that no matter what, we will achieve this goal, this dream, this vision will come. And no matter what's thrown at you, you will overcome it. As a restaurateur, we get that every single day, right? As a vendor, you get it every single day. I'm sitting here right now, looking outside my window, looking at it just raining like crazy. And you sit back and say, well, if this happened in the middle of our harvest, we're kind of having a more complex day. So there's always something you don't have control of. And I think that is the essence of what makes a name that we all recognize is somebody who never gave up, somebody who never quit, somebody at 1:30 in the morning, instead of going to bed and sleeping like a peaceful little puppy, instead you're waking up at 1:30 and you're grabbing your computer and you're punching those keys. You're the person that's waking up at 6 o'clock every morning, right? Giving up the things you want to do and saying, I'm going to be successful. And that is the key to a successful business. And importantly, that's the key to someone's name who we know. That's Joe Montana or that's Einstein. Right? These are people who every single day put in the hours and never gave up the dream that they had.
Now let's flash back and flash forward and say, I mean, you sound like a young 20-year-old with nothing but time and ambition on his hands, right? Not with an 8-year-old. With a family, success gets redefined, I think, in different ways. And so how has success been redefined year after year, decade after decade, as you've been on this journey?
Having a family is always more complex when you're running businesses, especially multiple businesses, especially when you're an entrepreneur or a serial entrepreneur and you're creating and always developing new things. But it also inspires the children. I have two daughters who are inspired to be successful, who see how hard I work, how hard we work. And they're driven that when they become older, they're going to be successful, whatever industry they pick, be that in the wine industry, in the culinary industry, or if they end up making chairs for a living, whatever they end up doing, they're going to be driven because they've seen what it takes to be successful. So is there a balance to that? Is there two sides every coin? There really is. But I think it's essential for us to raise our children with passion, raise our children with drive, raise our children by saying, whatever you want to do, be the best at it. Doesn't matter if you're a doctor, if you're a chair maker or if you're a winemaker. Be the best at your craft. Be driven in your craft. Be passionate about whatever you're doing. Both my parents are pilots. I'm not a pilot, right? But they're both pilots. And they taught me a very simple thing. Love what you do and be the best at it. And that's what I'm teaching my children.
100%. I was just having this conversation with somebody the other day. And I said, they said, you know, what do you think is the secret to success? I said, it turns out you can make a lot of money doing the things that you would do for free.
Absolutely. Right. My dad told me, he's like, hey, if you love what you do, you'll never have to work a day in your life. I am blessed and true to say that I have never had to work a day in my life. I started cooking at 13 years old because I loved cooking. I started a wine brand because I enjoyed making garage wine. And the day, what you come in, what you experience as a guest when you come to my restaurants, what you experience when you get a bottle of Let wine is you experience passion. You experience a craftsman. You experience a person who is excited to show their product to you. Be that wine, be that a beautiful crudo dish, or be that a 3-day fermented pizza dough we make upstairs using wine yeast from Burt Williams instead of using bread yeast. Whatever that is, you're showcasing your passion and people respect that. We need that nowadays. We are excited to have 150 employees that want to go to work. They don't need to go to work. They want to go to work. That is key.
How could you have made your life easier? When you look back at the, right? I ask the question to myself every month. How could I have made last month easier? What are other decisions that I could have made that would have served me better than some of the decisions that I made? If you look back on a longer stretch of time, how could you have made your life easier and still ended up with the same result?
I would throw that back to you and say, would you want to have made your life easier? What led you to this point right now? I sit back and remember talking to my mom when I was in high school, right? And saying, I made some mistakes like we all did, but man, I wouldn't have given any of those up, right? I think what we went through is younger, right? When I sit back right now, I see who we are right now. That's because of what we went through when we were younger. That's because of what the trials and tribulations we had to deal with, but also made us who we are. You sit back and you look at me as a restaurateur, right? It was those days working for Thomas Keller, those days working for Wayne Hirabashi, those days working for Charlie Palmer, those days working for these amazing chefs out there that were just so strict and the time were so hard. And I thought I would never make it through a dinner service, but that is what taught us to be who we are. That is what makes us at a core who we are. And I think there's not a single thing I would change my past, because if I changed with my past, I wouldn't be here in my present. And it's quintessential that we put in the hours, we put in the time. It's quintessential that we stretch those muscles figuratively to get us to where we are now.
I also think failure is a huge part of it. And like getting really, really comfortable with failure, getting really, really comfortable with rejection, which I think is really hard in our industry. One, because everywhere you look, you are surrounded by failure. I mean, just in our own careers. I mean, over the last 20, 30 years, you've seen prolific restaurateurs shut down restaurants, right? They'll have 10 hits and then 2 failures. And so there's a lot of fear around that, you know, because we'd rather hold on to this mediocre thing that we have as opposed to letting go of it to strive for something better. And then I think rejection is really a hurdle, because I think we all have a servant's heart. That's why we get into this. You like to cook for people more than you like to cook for yourself, which is why.
Absolutely.
Right. And so that being the case, I just think that understanding that if you don't try, you won't know. I've coached literally more than 100 restaurateurs. And I would argue that it's 80-20. 20% of what I coach is based off the great decisions that I made because I'm a fucking genius. And 80% of what I coach is based off trial and error. I failed my way to success. And so they'll say, what about this? I'm like, oh, I did that. You don't want to do that. It's going to be a huge mistake. If you look outside the industry, iterating is huge, right? People are always A, B, and C testing. They're trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. And I see that in your businesses, but I don't see it in the industry at large. So talk to me about the power of not only consistency, but pairing consistency with trial and error.
I think you sit back and hear the word moonshot all the time, right? It's a word that usually commonly comes up in inspirational conversations. But if you don't know how far you can push something, you don't know what the boundaries are. In the world of cooking, we have a very simple philosophy. For all my new cooks, I have them make soup. And I put the soup in 4 different cups. And I take what they think is a perfect seasoned soup. And I add a little bit more salt to the second cup, more salt to the third cup, more salt to the fourth cup. We mix it in and we say, okay, what you thought was a perfectly seasoned soup in cup A, now try cup B, right? Cup two. And C, that cup four is too salty. But somewhere between cup A and cup C, or in this case, cup A, cup one, cup four, is a correct quantity of salt. And that same analogy has been taken in life. We have to push it to see how far we can go. Now, there's certain boundaries we have. We know that we can't jump off the Empire State Building, think we can fly. That ain't going to work. It'll work one time. So on the same hand, we got to see how far can we push this curve. So as a business owner, we know that if we serve chicken sashimi, that's probably going to backfire on us. But we also know that if we just play a conservative and only do hamburgers and french fries, we're never going to push the envelope and grow and expand and be creative. So there's a very important life lesson that we have in business that is baked into every entrepreneur's head of saying, how far can you push it? How comfortable are you with risk? And I think back to your 80-20, if you're always conservative, you're always playing it safe, you're never going to grow. And if you sit there and say, hey, I'm going to every day change my concept, you're not consistent. So for us, we have to know strategically when to push the envelope and when to be safe. We have to know how far we can push the envelope and how far we got to pull back and say, no, that was too far. I was too aggressive on this one. But I think the key is an analogy I tell my staff all the time. If your goals go to point A to point B, and you have no idea what's in between A and B, then you have to have an analytical mind to know when to stop and turn around. The real example is you're walking up a mountain. You're saying, hey, my goal is to get top that mountain. And you come to a river and you see a big, we were talking about the Nile, right? It's going right in front of you. If you say that no matter what, I'm going to swim across that river, right? You might drown. You might get halfway in that river and be brought down 5 miles downstream by the time you get across it. And you just added a massive amount of distance between yourself and the goal. On the same hand, you can sit back and say, you know what? I'm going to look left and right, see if there's a bridge. Maybe I'm going to walk up and down that river a little bit to see if there's a bridge that makes my life easier, just beyond the apex of what I can see. But if all you do is spend your entire time walking up and down that river and never find a bridge, you're never going to get to your goal, your destination. It's essential that you need to sometimes take that risk and swim across that river, but you got to balance that by looking up and down that river first to see if there's a bridge 10 yards from you that saves you a 5 mile swim. So as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, it's all about understanding the mitigated risk and knowing when to push it, how far to push it. But if you play it safe every day, you will never grow and expand your business and you'll never be successful.
What should we steal from you? What tactics, tools, and strategies do you have that have served you well that anyone could adopt?
Be passionate. Be driven. I don't watch TV. I don't watch movies. I spend my time in my businesses. I sleep 5 hours a night every freaking night, right? Because I wake up and I go to bed with drive, with gusto. If you have a goal, if you have a dream, believe in yourself, believe in that dream. You have to balance that by setting realistic expectations. I can't assume that I'm able to fly to the moon. Can't do that with my hands. If my goal is to go to the moon, then I need to start being at a young age, want to be an astronaut. If my goal is to go to the moon, I got to start studying how rockets work. I got to start creating companies and businesses to allow myself to utilize technology and the world around me to achieve my goal. But I can't be ignorant by saying I'm going to flap my hands really hard and get to the moon. But you got to have a drive and a goal and an ambition. And you got to go to bed late and wake up early. And you got to be driven. And you got to balance that dream, that goal, with the reality that we live in. If my goal is to be a successful restaurateur, that means that I'm studying, I'm learning. I'm learning from people like Josh. I am listening to people like you. I am learning from those around me. I'm educating myself. I'm pushing the boundaries. I am day in, day out, pushing myself to be the best version of who I can be without ever losing sight of what my goal is. So it is quintessential that every single day when you wake up, every night when you go to bed, you tell yourself, what am I going to do the next day? What am I going to do tomorrow? What is my goal when I wake up? For that day, for that week, for that month, for that year, for that decade, and be driven every single day.
The restaurant industry is filled with all of these unspoken rules and traditions about how things should be done. How would you like to see our industry turn the tables to create a better future for all of us?
Man, before the Wright brothers, everyone thought that only birds could fly. So if you sit there and you only look in the past, you're never going to see in the future. you sit back and look at what we were as a restaurant industry 100 years ago, we were the guys behind the door who never had a window inside that kitchen. We were the people who never had the ability to talk to the masses. We never had TV shows. We never had radio shows. We never had our own businesses. We were literally the people who stood in the back of the room, right? We're not able to stand in the front of the room. I'm sitting here talking to you guys right now in a 10,000 square foot restaurant that has open kitchen that has no walls in my kitchen. And when you walk inside this restaurant, the first thing you see is a massive open kitchen, and you watch what we do because we are on display, because we want to showcase our craft. We talk about our farmers, our ranchers, our vintners. We talk about our growers. We talk about our partners. We talk about the people who make our plates for us. We talk about Jared, who's taking soil from the Oakland Bay Area and making plates for us and hand spinning them, hand baking them. End of the day, our industry is growing and evolving, and that only happens by people who are passionate, people who want to showcase their craft, and people who want to push the envelope. And I'm so excited for the future. I'm so excited to see where we're going to go. And I'm more excited about inspiring the next generation.
Our industry suffers from razor-thin margins. And the only way for us to ensure profitability is to make data-driven decisions. The numbers don't lie. And Yelp for Restaurants just released some incredibly compelling numbers. For starters, Yelp reaches 9 times more customers online than OpenTable. And when restaurants pair that level of visibility with Guest Manager and Yelp ads, they experience up to an 8% lift in diner bookings. Think about what that 8% lift could do for your restaurant's finances. To learn more about how Yelp for Restaurants can support your business, visit restaurants.yelp.com/fullcomp to learn more today. That's Chef Dustin Vallette. For more information on the chef and his restaurant, visit themathison.com. If you want to tell us your story, hear previous episodes, or check out our other content, go to restaurants.yelp.com/fullcomp. Thank you so much for listening to the show. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, please leave us a review. A special thanks to Yelp for helping us spread the word to the whole hospitality community. I'm Josh Kopel. You've been listening to Full Comp.